How many of us think of Gershwin and Ellington as contemporaries? And more to the point, how many of us know there was a rivalry between them? Welcome back to Accelerando. I'm Paula Tuttle, and today we take a look at two American icons, George Gershwin and Duke Ellington. George Gershwin was a tunesmith from the Tin Pan Alley. Tin Pan Alley was both an area of New York City and a collection of songwriters and publishers that dominated the music scene from around 1885 until the Great Depression. So Tin Pan Alley, it was a district in New York, like the Flower District or the Garment District, and it originated with a block on the West 28th between 5th and 6th. And the name came from an insult in the New York Times referring to the sound of cheap upright pianos all playing at the same time. They sounded like tin pans being banged in an alley. George Gershwin, he quit school at 15 years old to become a song plugger on the Tin Pan Alley. And he earned $15 a week from Jerome Remick, who had an office in New York and Chicago. His first published song was "When You Want 'Em, You Can't Get 'Em. When You Got 'Em, You Don't Want 'Em." And he got 50 cents for it. When he was 16, he moved to the Aeolian Company, where he made piano rolls for player pianos. And he produced hundreds of duo art rolls that were essentially recordings of himself and his original compositions. But he used pseudonyms, including Fred Murtha and Bert Wynn. George Gershwin was a typical songwriter that inhabited the district, and many people say he could have continued his career just pecking out songs, but we know he wrote Broadway and classical works. George was one of the first crossover composers from jazz to classical, but what we aren't aware of, he didn't have training in either one. George writes his first hit in 1919, Swanee, which was a throwback to the minstrel tunes that were popular 50 years before. The song became Al Jolson's trademark tune.
Swanee, you're calling me. Swanee, how I love you, how I love you, my dear old Swanee.
Then Gershwin went on to write 30 Broadway plays, and he collaborated with his brother Ira on dozens of songs that are now in the Great American Songbook. In the Tin Pan Alley era, Gershwin's skills in the marketplace were unsurpassed. And soon he was commissioned to write a work that mixed jazz and classical influences. Rhapsody in Blue had such a tremendous success. George, the Tin Pan Alley songwriter, transformed into the hottest young classical composer in America. About this time, George went to Paris, seeking the tutelage of Nadia Boulanger. But she refused to teach him because, well, she thought she'd ruin him. And he got the same response from Maurice Ravel, who said, "Why become a second-rate Ravel when you're already a first-rate Gershwin?" And maybe something to the effect that it was he, Ravel, that should be studying with him. After a few years in Paris, he returned to New York and wrote An American in Paris. So George, he really reinvented himself with Rhapsody in Blue, and he went on to compose more jazz classic crossovers with American in Paris, and eventually, Porgy and Bess. This crossover path that he created was not something that many other composers of the era achieved or enjoyed. You might think George opened the doors of symphony orchestras to more jazz musicians, but nothing like that happened. Symphonies may have been open to jazz in spirit, but not so much to jazz musicians. Duke Ellington was Gershwin's contemporary, and he had a royal reputation for being a first-rate performer and an entertainer. The two were peers. Maggie and Bess premiered, Ellington made some remarks to a journalist that betrayed his envy. Ted Gioia, in his book Music, A Subversive History, he goes so far as to say Ellington was jealous of Gershwin because he told the journalist, Gershwin pilfered key elements of his music from a hodgepodge of sources from Liszt to Dickie Wells' kazoo band. Whoa. Ellington was especially jealous of Porgy and Bess. But was the rivalry one-sided? Apparently, George asked Duke to collaborate on some songs, but got a cold reception there. By all indications, Gershwin wasn't aware of Ellington's jealousy. He actually admired him and said he learned a lot from the great bandleader. And this probably made Ellington even more irritated. Ellington was working on a quasi-opera at the end of his life, at the time of his death, too. It was called Queenie Pie, and he'd wanted to write it for 40 years. And the notion that Gershwin staged an African-American opera was probably just eating at him. But Ellington outlived Gershwin, and he had a lot of kind things to say about him going forward. George died at 38, and like so many composers that died at a young age, we can't help but ask, what would he have produced in the next 10 years? The next 20? After George's death, a lot of his music was used in films, and there was a biography made about his life. And the authors had to invent a love interest because, well, there was really nothing to George's life except composing. Both Gershwin and Ellington are landmarks in American music. Their music stems from jazz traditions, but both were innovative, and they borrowed elsewhere when it suited their needs. Ellington called his own music American music, not just jazz. And he sometimes embraced a phrase he liked to refer to his music, the beyond category. Ellington was called the most significant composer of the genre by Gunther Schuller, which is saying something. I think both these men were explorers as much as composers. It makes sense to me they both should embrace a yes-and attitude toward each other. Rivalry can be good if it makes you better, and each of them found a way. That's it for this week, and maybe take a moment to listen to some jazz while the summer is still lazy. And as always, please support live musicians. Live music is the very best. We'll see you next time.